Good. But let's continue on our reflections about Palm Sunday today. I'm somebody who's always been fascinated with crowd, not just the crowd you might meet at a busy train station. I'm talking about an intentional, an energetic crowd, a crowd that's come together for a reason and they're excited. There's something that sort of gives me goosebumps when I sort of see a crowd. I watch Glastonbury every year, and often I wouldn't particularly listen to a lot of the groups, but I watch the crowds. I just think they're amazing. One of the jobs I would like you to do this morning is to think about the times where you have experienced an amazing crowd. And I'm going to give you a couple of personal examples of where it's happened to me, first off. Now, there's a few of you in the room today. Now, hands up here if you follow sport in some way. Let's do sort of like the top three: football, rugby. You were in Worcester, so let's cricket as well. I think for those who have followed those, and perhaps you've gone to a game, just start to think about some of an amazing experience you may have had. I'm going to share one, the most amazing one I had. It was the first time I went to Wembley, and it was the Division One still playoff final between Leicester City and Swindon Town. It didn't look like an amazing game on paper, but it's still classed as an absolute classic. It was the first time I'd gone there. It was the old Wembley Stadium. You had the two towers as you walked up towards the stadium as well, and I'd got a great seat there because yeah, I'm from Leicester and my family's still from Leicester, and I've followed Leicester from a distance all my life, and I've got friends who were very religious about following Leicester, so I jumped on their back whenever there was an opportunity to go and watch a big game, which I thoroughly enjoyed. We had a great position right on the halfway line, part way up, and it was a great view of Wembley. It was really good. Of course, the day didn't quite work out how we wanted to. So Swindon went one up. They went two up. Partway through the second half, they went three up. And then at that point, you're thinking, well, it's not quite the day out to Wembley we were expecting. And then Leicester got one back. They got a second back. And then somehow they got a third back towards the end of the second half. And it was that moment when they scored that third goal, the most unlikely of equalisers, that it was just such an amazing. It still gives me goosebumps now because obviously I was there as myself, but I felt part of this huge energy of people. And that's it. Yeah, I can only say that I felt part of this sort of, well, I know there was about 75,000 in the stadium. So, yeah, let's say 30,000 people that were happy about this, about this equaliser, and the other half that weren't so happy about that. But it was such a tremendous and amazing feeling. Now, we had the great high, and then we had the great low, because then 6 minutes from the end, Swindon got a penalty, and they went on to win 4-3. So it was a very grumpy, but you can still watch the game, and if you like your football, it is a great game to go and watch. Now it all worked out in the end. I went back to Wembley the following year, and we beat local rivals Derby to go up to the Premiership for the first time. Okay, so for those who like sports, think about that opportunity, those memories of a great game. Let's move on to another. If you're not into sport, perhaps you're into concerts, gigs, recitals, theatre, musicals. Think about those times where you've been part of an amazing crowd. Okay. Now, a very famous pop band, Coldplay, I'd sort of followed for many years. And what I was really impressed with them is that they have a relationship with their crowds. Now, I don't particularly listen to their music. We don't listen to their music at home, but whenever they've come on Glastonbury or the other festivals, I thought, oh, they really get that relationship with the crowd. And I thought, I want to go and experience that. And particularly their very famous song called Viva La Vida. It's very anthemic. I thought, oh, that I just love that relationship with the crowd and the group. So, Lisa and I went back to New Wembley Stadium a couple of years ago, and is that the picture that's up at the moment? Yeah, so that's the picture that Lisa or I took from where we were in the stands, and you all have the wristbands on and they all light up, and it's all very coordinated, and it's an amazing experience. So again, if that's sort of where you are, think about it's. I'm going to explain more about this later on, but think about that time, that energy when you were part of a big crowd. Let's move on to the crowds in the Bible, okay? Crowds in the Bible are quite a big thing throughout Old and New Testament, okay? and you've got crowds of every size and every emotion. For those of you just here, don't overthink of it. What's the first crowd in the Bible apart from the Palm Sunday crowd? I'm not giving you any points for that. Any other crowds in the Bible that you can think of? Yeah, we've got, okay, feeding the 5,000 anymore? Yeah, that Pentecost, yes, 3,000 people came to the Lord on that day. I've often wondered how that crowd came together. Okay, yeah, now that, yeah, it'd be interesting to know, yeah, there was clearly people there, and there were some people there at crucifixion, yeah. Any others? Okay, yes, yeah. Yes, yeah, Sermon on the Mount. I was wondering if that was coming as well. Okay. What was that one, sorry? Okay, yeah, the crowd, yeah, the marriage in Galilee, yeah. So for those, those moments, those big crowd moments, yeah, keep those sort of in mind as we then sort of now arrive at our crowd moment on Palm Sunday. Now, a little sort of Bible study, just because it came really strong to me again as that reading came up to me again there today. It's a bit of a Bible, I'm not going to spend much time on this now, but a bit of a Bible study moment for you this coming week, because Matthew's gospel makes it really clear, and it's easy to overlook. There were two donkeys involved here. There was a mother and its baby. It's often overlooked that little bit. And then you can see actual fact that there's some interesting translation because of the way that it quotes Zechariah, which was in Hebrew, and then that was translated back into the ordinary Greek at the time, and then it's come to us in English. But if you end up looking at it, you end up going, hang on, there's two donkeys here, and then you can read how it looks in plural, that was that it could actually read it very literally, that Jesus sat on two donkeys. And you go, well, have a read of it. I'll give you a quick clue about the Hebrew, is that Hebrew poetry uses, and I can never say this word, so bear with me, you can laugh at me if I get this wrong, parallelism. Oh, I got it right. There we go. So it's the way that Hebrew works with that. I'm not going to say it again. It's where that they give the same situation from two angles. Okay. And that's what they use in Hebrew poetry. But it's a great, go away and have a look at the verses again this week. I think you'll find them quite interesting. Now, I very much agreed what was shown during the all-age clip there in terms of why the crowd was there, because sometimes the way that it's presented on Palm Sunday is that it's, well, how it is through Holy Week is perhaps how the crowd turn, because we've got two significant crowds, haven't we, as part of Holy Week. We've got the crowd on Palm Sunday, and was it that crowd that then turned against Jesus come Good Friday? Yeah, I'm far more of I like the idea of it was two different crowds. A, when you have a lot of people, the same two sets of people don't all come together. Good Friday was a trial, and I think this was far more of a curated crowd against Jesus by those who didn't want him there. Whereas this crowd, as was alluded to in the video, this was a crowd which was welcoming of Jesus, that actually knew Jesus, that was perhaps at those other crowd instances, like Sermon on the Mount, like at the feeding of the four or the 5,000, who might have been at any of other those moments where there had been crowds around Jesus. Perhaps they'd also heard about the raising of Lazarus as well. This may have been word of mouth as well, so they might not have been part of some crowds, but this was a sympathetic crowd, a crowd who, when they were shouting, save, 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 this was a positive crowd who had come and were understanding who Jesus was. And Matthew's gospel here, unlike Mark, that sort of expects you to know all of your Old Testament. And it's one of those things where you can rattle through Mark's gospel and you think, oh, it's a bit quick and easy. But in fact, he actually expects you to know all the Old Testament. So he doesn't mention Zechariah 9, verse 9. He just sees it's implicit in his version of the gospel. Whereas in Matthew, it's there. And that's there to very explicitly say, if you didn't know your Zechariah off by heart, that this was a prophetic moment. This was about Jesus saying, gentle, he's going to come on a donkey. This is about, yes, the Saviour who is coming, and here he is. He then asks us, as a crowd of people and as a church, who is the Jesus that we welcome? And it's a good question, I think, to ponder on. And the way that I've come at this today is to, well, there'll be a few things. The first way is that I looked at, well, I went on your website again, because I'm still getting to know you, and I looked at your values. And I thought, well, your values are actually the sort of Jesus that I would like to welcome. So your values, which you may or may not know straight off, firstly, that Bible focused. We know that Jesus, throughout his ministry, was somebody that knew his scriptures very well. Now, of course, he didn't have a Bible. He was still being part of it and being written, but he knew the Old Testament very well, and he used that at time to strengthen him, to rebuke, to correct, and to teach within all of that. So I think that's the sort of Jesus that we are welcoming, somebody who knows their Bible, who wrestles with it and uses it every day, doesn't just sort of quote their favorite verses, who deeply understands their Bible. I was really thanks for leading the prayers about, because that's it, that's another quality, that it's about a conversation with God. And it is right, and often English congregations, we do find it really hard to pray together. So I really appreciated what you brought today. And I'm hoping that was helpful for people who find it hard to pray out loud. And it's something that ultimately, this is a conversation that you can have as a community in a group. It's a conversation between you and Jesus. And you know that within the Bible, how Jesus used prayer very deliberately and very much in conversation, crying out. That's it, that moment that always gets me, that you will reflect on Good Friday in the Garden of Gethsemane. I was going to just take this cup away from me. That moment, yeah, you can just feel how difficult that was. But that's that communion with God in prayer. We then know he's loving as well. And throughout Jesus' ministry, he expresses the depth of what love is from lots of different angles and in ways that challenged people as well. Challenged people at the time, and I think still challenges us today and challenges Christians today, because that's it. I think we can look back at the Bible and go, oh, we know who the bad guys were and we're the good guys. But in fact, lots of Christians, I think, still don't quite get it and don't quite get what a loving Jesus is or looks like. We then go on to Jesus being faithful. And this coming week is all about Jesus' faithfulness, of about him fully human, taking himself to the cross. That faithfulness as a servant challenges us to be faithful. We've then got that generosity of those values of being loving and being generous to others. And we know it's part of our, there's all sort of studies now and psychology is done where when you are generous, we know now that in fact it's something that you receive a blessing as well. But it has to mean something. That generosity has to be sacrificial, I think. And then there's that risk-taking. Throughout Jesus' ministry, he is a risk-taker, which ultimately took him to the cross, that fulfillment of scripture. But you see throughout his ministry, he is taking risks, for which you can see there could have been different outcomes. That time when he walked through the crowd after they wanted to stone him, but he somehow managed to calm the crowd as well. So I've presented the welcome of Jesus in one particular way, but I'm really well, humbled and, well, it'll be a fantastic conversation. We're going to have Malcolm and Ali who are going to come out and talk about, and Ali's going to talk about the Jesus that he has welcomed in his life. And they're going to have a conversation now, quite a bit, a longer conversation than we would have all otherwise had chance for next week. So, Malcolm, Ali, you're going to come and have a conversation now, and we're going to very much enjoy listening to you. Thank you.